This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
And welcome in Inside the Clubhouse, kicking off 2026 with our first show of the year. Glad to have you along. Alongside Bruce Levine, I'm Mike Esposito, and for David Haw today, we have a huge show for you with lots of great guests. We'll get to that in a second. We are broadcasting live from the Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. But Bruce, the news of the week, bad news for Cubs fans who were hoping to sign another Japanese free agent.
No Imai, oh my, for the Cubs is the answer right now, as the Chicago Cubs, in the pursuit of another power arm for the rotation, miss out on getting Imai. We'll talk a little bit about that certainly throughout the show. What's next for the Cubs? What's next for the White Sox as they pursue a better image of themselves, a better representation of themselves in 2026. All that a part of our show, as we said, as Mike said, we start our first show of 2026. And Mike, put out the phone lines and let's get your opinion about the Imai situation. I'll give you mine.
Absolutely. 312-644-6767. You could call us, you could text us. Tatsuya Imai signs with the Astros. 3 years, 54 mil, max value 63 with opt-outs after each season. Cubs fans, we want your thoughts on the Imai signing with Houston. What do you think? Do you still believe in Jed Hoyer, Carter Hawkins? Do you think they'll be able to pull this offseason off and put the Cubs in position to be contenders? And Bruce, while we wait for people to chime in, we want to give a quick guest list. We have a great show for everybody today. Joe Madden will join us at 10:30, Ryan Dempster at the top of the 10 o'clock hour, and Jim Callis, senior writer at MLB Pipeline, to talk minor leagues and draft info. So a chock full show, but the Imai stuff, certainly the news of the day, the last few days around Cubs fans' houses, I'm sure.
Yeah, from all we know about it, the Cubs were in on Imai from the very beginning. We understand the Japanese infrastructure they've created here with Imanaga and Suzuki being successful players for the Cubs and thriving in this environment. So we knew that the Cubs, under Jed Hoyer since 2020, has established a very strong image of themselves in the Japanese baseball environment. And the fact that Jed has been over there numerous times on his own, getting to know the people that run Japanese baseball, as well as looking at the different talent, indicates every time a good Japanese player is available, the Cubs have to be a serious contender for getting him. In the case of Imai, the assumption here, Mike, is this. It's a three-year contract, as you said, for $54 million with bonuses that he can make. It can go up to $63 million. But the only guarantee for the Houston Astros who signed him is 1 year, okay?
Yep.
If he has a great year, Scott Boras, his agent, and Imai are going to become free agents again, okay? He has an opt-out after every year. So the one thing that the Astros may be looking at, because of posting fees that you have to pay his team in Japan, the Astros are looking at a one-year deal if he does well, him opting out, paying close to $30 million for that 1 year. Mm-hmm. So it's $18 million with a $2 million bonus, okay, and $9.5 million in posting fees. So was it worth it for the Cubs? Is it worth it for the Astros? Obviously, they said yes to have a chance to have him for 3 years. But if he's really good, see him walk away after one, and you're paying $30
million. Well, and speaking personally, as soon as I saw the opt-outs after each year, I figured in my head that this is why the Cubs did not this is why he signed with Houston. This is why the Cubs did not want this. They don't want him. If they sign him for 3 years, if they sign him for 4 years, they want him for that time. They don't want to go through this whole process and, as you said, spend $30 million for 1 year and then have him opt out.
The opt-out is probably the worst idea for a major league team in the history of the sport, right? For a player, it's nirvana because in the case of Imai, you're guaranteed $54 million.
Right.
If you're not good, you're still getting $54 million over the next 3 years. They're going to carry you after that first year into the second and third. And if you're just mediocre, you're still going to be paying him an average of $20 million a year. In the case of the player, you're paying him. Here's why it's a really bad idea, Mike. You're paying him with the idea he's going to be really good.
Sure.
He's saying, okay, but if I'm really good, I get to leave.
I'm out of here, yep.
Yeah. So, to me, that makes zero sense, other than the fact that if a team is just interested in 1 year, that's all you might get out of them. But you're going to be stuck with them for three if he's not very good.
Yeah, to me, it's not a great situation with the opt-outs. I understand the organizational reasons for that, but I know our listeners have lots to say, and they're lining up right now on the phone lines at 312-644-6767. So, Bruce, let's get out to the phones, and let's start in Byron, where Mitch is inside the clubhouse. Hey, Mitch, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy New Year to
Happy New Year.
Bruce. Happy New Year to Mike. I just want to say I could care less about Tetsuya Imai. What I do care about is I'm sick and tired of hearing all the Nico Horner trade rumors. The best thing Jed Hoyer could do, hit the ground running in 2026, call a press conference, say we have no intention of trading Nico Horner. We want to try and sign him to a 3 or 4 year extension. Take care of your people. If you sign Nico to an extension and then go out and get Zach Gallen, I'm going to be happy with the offseason, but I don't want to hear any more crap about Nico Horner right. being on the move or even entertaining offers or anything. I mean, he's our best and most valuable all-around player. Extend him. Thank you, guys.
Hold on a second. You still
Thanks,
there?
Mitch.
Mitch?
Yes, I'm still here.
All right. Take your fan hat off,
okay.
And put on your GM hat. What benefit would it be for you as a GM to say, we're going to try to extend him, and we're not going to trade him? Does that benefit you as a GM when you go in for negotiations over the next 2.5 months before the year begins?
I get that gives more leverage to his agent. I get that. I understand that. But at the same time, you're also speaking to the ball player and letting him know his value. You're
True.
Speaking to the fan base and letting them know.
Good points.
A fan favorite. You want to keep a fan favorite instead of all this speculation. I mean, so yeah, you're going to be given a little bit of leverage, or maybe a lot of leverage, to the agent. But at the same time, again, you're speaking to the ball player and you're saying, hey, we love you. We want to keep you. You're speaking to the fan base that's paying $30 for a hot dog and a beer. I mean, you know,
yep.
let's keep it's, and you're going to win ball games with a player like Nico Horner. You're going to win ball games. He's a proven winner.
No, you don't have to convince me, and it's a great call. Thank you.
Thanks,
Mike.
Mitch.
It's a wonderful call because it expresses what sometimes what I miss as a reporter, what a front office or an ownership misses in the calculation of he's one of the most popular Cubs for a long time right now.
Yep.
And the fans don't miss the idea that even though he doesn't hit 40 home runs, he helps you win on the bases, in the field, at bat, highest batting average in baseball with men in scoring position. So the new metrics don't always tell you about the value of a player. In the case of Nico Hoerner, they don't.
A great baseball player, great baseball IQ. We've talked about this. He's a guy that if you put a baseball player on a piece of paper, you think of all the intangibles, all the different things he brings both on the field and in the clubhouse, and nobody knows this better than you. Nobody's there more than you are. You see what he does in the clubhouse and that kind of attitude, that kind of atmosphere that he helps create in that clubhouse. Well,
more importantly, Spiegel and Holmes will not let him be traded.
That's right.
So he's a part of their show during the season and an integral part of the good times and fun they have with him, as we heard this week, and we'll be playing back some of their interview with Nico throughout the show.
312-644-6767 if you'd like to chime in on the EMI discussion or on the Jed/Carter Hawkins discussion. Please jump in. We have lots of others on the line. But yes, Bruce.
David Hall will return as our co-host next week.
Will.
As much as I enjoyed doing the show, David will be back starting next weekend.
Sounds good. And we'll be glad to have David back. Now, Bruce, let's head out to Oak Lawn where Mo is inside the clubhouse. Hey, Mo, good morning.
How we doing, guys?
Good. How are you doing?
I don't think Amaya was the end-all, be-all for the Cubs offseason. I mean, there's still a few guys out there, Ranger Suarez, Zach Allen. I mean, that's really it for the free agency side of it that I would be happy with. This whole offseason for me has felt like it's going to be a trade. The system is just, there's too many guys that are backed up that need to be coming up soon, and I just think that Jed's got something, that he's got to dump some prospects up his sleeve. I'm praying Joe Ryan is the answer. I love Joe Ryan. He's exactly what this rotation needs. I'll even settle for Edward Cabrera. You know, it's I think a trade's got to happen on the pitching side of it. I just don't see the Cubs forking up the cash to pay a Ranger Suarez or something like that. They're just it's ridiculous that we're gonna act like a mid-market team. And we're going to watch other teams outbid us for something that clearly ended our season last year when it's just ridiculous to see. And then you're going to let Tucker walk, and we're not going to even fix anything on the offensive side. It's just we're going to rely too much on the rookies this year, and it's going to be a hit or miss. I'm not too happy about it right now.
Mo, I feel your frustration, and actually you echo a lot of what I think a lot of Cubs fans have been saying, is that you made a great trade last year for Tucker to try to put you over the top. There's not even rumblings about Tucker coming back. You brought up Cade Horton. He was an ace for you last year, but when he got hurt, you faltered in the pitching department down the stretch there in the playoffs. And so far, and again, so far today on January 3rd, your offseason additions have been bullpen arms, which is great. You need bullpen arms. But that starting pitcher remains elusive. And aside from Cade Horton, you've got, and I'm not trying to in any way say anything negative about the Cubs starting pitchers, but they're all in their 30s. They're all, you know, a bit long in the tooth, and who knows where they slot in next year.
More importantly, other than Horton and an option, and I think one of the starting pitchers, I think it's Boyd.
Yep.
You know, most of them are free agents after next year. Okay.
Yep.
So you have a Cub team full of 1 year and out guys in Happen left, Suzuki right, DH. Also, you have Hoerner at second base. You have Kelly with an option, I think, behind the plate. You have all your pitchers other than Boyd and Horton, starting pitchers, they're all free agents. So with that in mind, there's work to do. But again, what's in front of us is 2026, how they're going to compete there. I'm with the caller, Mike. I think instead of going 4, 5, 6 years on a $25 to $30 million contract on Valdez or Suarez or Gallen, a trade for a guy like Mackenzie Gore of Washington, who they were certainly very interested in at the trading deadline last year, is more a place to go. You know, Cabrera with the Marlins, they've been after him for 2 years. No deal so far. Don't know if they're going to move him or not, but certainly someone else they're interested in.
And Sandy Alcantara is a name that was talked about at the deadline, too, last year. Any interest there? Any thoughts on him?
I don't know if the Cubs have good players to trade, okay? If you're going to trade Casey, if you're going to consider trading Ballesteros, which a lot of baseball people don't like, even though he doesn't have the quote-unquote perfect position, he's going to hit. And how much he's going to hit, you might really regret trading a Ballesteros. But he's going to be asked for in a trade. And pitching-wise in the minor leagues, the Cubs are a little weak. Right now it's Jackson Wiggins, who's their top young pitcher. He's going to be asked for coming back for a guy like Cabrera or Mackenzie Gore. So as the caller points out, they do have really good young players like the ones we've named. There's just not 10 of them, right?
Right.
So once you make a move for them, you know, you're getting back a pitcher. Hopefully that pitcher is going to be with you for 2 or 3 years in the case of Gore or Cabrera. That's a move that I would continue to keep my eye on as well.
312-644-6767. If you'd like to chime in, this is Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce. I'm Mike in for David today. Back out to the phones we go, Bruce, in Racine, Wisconsin. Mike is up next. Hey, Mike, good morning. Mike?
No, Mike.
We are in the missing Mike formation. A 331 texter, Bruce, wants us to repay or overpay, excuse me, for another John Lester, which does not sound like is in the offing. And not only that, I would say that there's not another John Lester out there at this point.
You know, John Lester is arguably the best free agent signing in Cubs history, right? For what you got out of him, it was a 6-year deal?
6 years, $155 million.
Yep. Right. I would say you got a good 4.5 to 5 years out of that deal. That was really good. You know,
amazing.
So,
yep.
So with all that in mind, that's the best. I don't think, I mean, if you get anything close to that, most long-term contracts for pitchers now in their 30s, you are hoping that the fourth, fifth, and sixth year are of no consequence, that the guy helped you in the first 3 years win, right? That's pretty much what you're looking at in a 30-year-old plus pitcher to come in your rotation, and you give him somewhere between $125 and $200 million.
Bruce, looking on the text line, in a question about the payroll past 2027, because the potential for a work stoppage, the potential for a lockout, all of that with the new CBA coming due. How much of that, I mean, because to me, this hovers over everything in our texter asking a similar question. Do the Cubs want to have people on the payroll past this season? Is that a strategy, do you think?
Well, I don't think many major league teams, I don't think you count the Dodgers in on this, but in general, many major league teams are concerned about what is the pay structure going to look like after next year. So we're hearing about lockout, we're hearing about strike, but most importantly, we're hearing about the owners insisting on having a cap on how much they spend. Players will insist on having a cap on the least amount of money they spend. They don't want to talk about having this type of salary structure. Owners are insisting upon it. So with that in mind, owners and general managers will tell you, well, if we have too many guys signed beyond next year, are we going to be locked into a salary cap that we can't really build our team around, right? And the Dodgers, they don't care how much money they spend.
They do
right?
not care. Nope.
They spent over $160 million just in penalties last year for, you know, going over the luxury tax. They don't care. It was somewhere around $500 million that they spent on payroll. That's a different team, a different stratosphere. They're not a part of the other 29, okay? The other 29 are going to be concerned about, do we have too many contracts that are locking us in so the next 3 years, when the salary cap is settling in, are we going to be able to move and add to our team when we need to? And then, you know, that's part of the structure that's really holding some teams back.
I want to ask you about Kyle Tucker because he was obviously here last year. I know a lot of Cubs fans hope that maybe he would be a long-term piece, but we have not heard anything of that sort. But he is also still out there, still widely considered as the best bat available. But to me, and you tell me if I'm wrong, it seems pretty quiet around Kyle Tucker and his free agency.
Let me ask you this, Mike. If Tucker doesn't have the big market, like it was alluded to by people like Jim Bowden in November, where he said they're going to offer, the offers will be 10 years, $400 million, mm-hmm. you know, in that area. If there's nothing like that, and we haven't seen anything like that as far as the rumor mill, would you, as Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins, consider offering him a 3-year deal that does have opt-outs?
If
the
that
Bellinger,
is...
Bellinger-like contract.
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean,
if you're serious about trying to win the World Series, I would absolutely do that.
I'm just saying, you know, is it possible that he doesn't hear Toronto offering 7 years and $300 million, you know, does he reevaluate himself after two injury plagued years and go, let's take a 3-year deal with opt-outs and I'll revisit the market next year at age 30.
I think the Cubs would be smart to do that. And like I said, if you're truly trying to win the World Series, I understand the finances, I understand the payroll, I understand all the stuff that we were just talking about with going past this year. But for a guy that you, and a lot of people believe is one of the best hitters in the game, and you are a team that made the second round of the National League playoffs and then fell short last year, I absolutely would do that.
So you're saying I'd rather do this than leave it up to Suzuki and Wright and then combinations of Alcantara, Ballesteros, Casey picking up those other at-bats?
I think in the same way they did with Belly a few years ago, as you pointed out, when the market wasn't there, they pounced and he did opt out. But they got what a great year they got from him, right? I mean, that was a huge boost to that year's Cubs team. And if you're trying to win.
He didn't opt out. He got traded.
Traded to the Yankees. My bad.
Yeah.
But he had that opt out in his contract, though, right?
He did. Yeah, he did, and he's
using it right now.
He's
actually
using it right now. So, so there is benefits to the opt out, mostly for the players, we pointed out. But again, stranger things have happened. So keep your eye on this market. See how it evolves here. You know, we're looking at, you know, the third base situation and Kazumu Okamoto, a third baseman, first baseman, having to sign by Sunday, with the Cubs being in that rumored market. He's a first baseman, third baseman, a lot of power from the right side. Other teams mentioned for him are Padres, Pirates, Blue Jays, Red Sox, Angels, really throwing it against a wall.
And we haven't even mentioned Alex Bregman, but we will as we go forward in the show. But we need to take a quick timeout. But again, let me refresh you with our guest list. Great guest coming up for you. Coming up next, Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline will join us during the 10 o'clock hour. Your pal and mine, Joe Maddon, will join us, the former Cubs manager. And Ryan Dempster will join us as well. Big show for you. Lots to talk about. Jim Callis is next. This is Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a significant, significant event for us, and it can't be understated how important it is. You know, we've been, you know, hard at work at bringing talent into the organization in different ways, and obviously the amateur draft is an obvious avenue, and now to be able to get a chance at, you know, the top talent in the draft is really exciting and just gives us a greater boost.
That is Chris Getz of the White Sox talking about landing the top overall draft pick. And you are back on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito, and for David Haught today. To talk draft, to talk prospects, we hop on out to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today.
Jim Callis, our good friend joining us from MLB Pipeline, does a terrific job for the last, gosh, it's 30-plus years being the number one guru when it comes to amateur and minor league players. Jim, happy New Year. I think we're still in that timeline, you know,
yeah.
A few days here.
Mike and David's not going to come down on you.
Okay. Sounds good. Mike and I, happy to have you on today. Let's start with, you know, we heard Chris Getz's voice and the obvious idea that the White Sox are going to pick number one for the third time in their history this year. You look at that wonderful shortstop market that is staring people in the face for players that are most likely to be available. Is it a slam dunk? It's the kid from UCLA, or do the other three shortstops right behind him deserve consideration as the number one pick?
Yeah, I mean, kind of yes and no to all that. I mean, or yes to both your questions, because I do think at this point of the year where we're still 6-plus months out from the draft, nothing's set in stone. A lot of things can change. But that said, I do think Rock Chalowski's probably the biggest lock to go number one at this point of the draft, probably since Adley Rutschman, you know, back in 2019. I mean, there's not much to argue with about Rock Chalowski. I mean, he's one of the best hitters in the draft, 6-plus power. He's a quality shortstop. Yeah, you know, the one knock on him is he's not a great runner. It's probably fringy to average, but it doesn't prevent him from making all the plays as shortstop and being a dynamic offensive player. He's got bloodlines. His dad is a longtime scout, was a former supplemental first-round pick way back when I was starting my career back in the early 90s. But yeah, no, he's legit. He had a great year. He was kind of the consensus player of the year last year in college baseball. I mean, if you want to nitpick him besides the speed, I mean, you wish, you know, UCLA's in the Big Ten. You wish you got to see him against better competition on a week-in, week-out basis, but that's not his fault. He's really, really good. So he is the clear favorite. But that said, I mean, Grady Emerson, who's our number two prospect, another one of the shortstops you mentioned, high school kid from Texas. You know, I asked scouts, like, what's the knock on this kid's game? Because he's, you know, really good hitter. He's grown into power. He's a solid runner, quality defender like Rock. And I laughed because, like, one guy said, oh, probably the worst thing I can say about Grady Emerson is he's not Bobby Witt Jr. because they're both from the same part of Texas. like, he's not quite that good, but he's really, really good. But, you know, Grady Emerson's a consideration. Justin LeBron from Alabama, who's quicker and has more power, but isn't quite the hitter. Chalowski would be another guy. Jacob Lombard, who's the son of George Lombard, who played in the big leagues, is another shortstop. Then you got college guys. You know, I think Drew Burris at Georgia Tech is probably the best non-shortstop. So there's a lot of options. They'll do their due diligence. But right now, if the draft were today, I think it would be a pretty easy pick. The Rock Chalowski goes number one.
Jim, I've seen Chalowski referred to or comped to Troy Tulowitzki, which I think Sox fans would take in a second. Is that accurate in your mind? Is that something where you envision, you know, 5-10 years from now that Rock Chalowski is in that vein?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually wrote that.
Oh, there you go. Well, there
yeah,
you have
I'll
it.
I'll take credit for that. I think he's the best all-around college shortstop since Tulowitzki, who was in the 2005 draft. Like, you know, obviously Dansby Swanson, who we see in Chicago, was number one overall pick. but I don't think he had Chalowski's offensive upside. You know, Alex Bregman was the number two pick in the year where Dansby went number one. And, you know, Alex was not the same kind of power hitter he became in pro ball. And there were some questions as to whether he could play shortstop. And I think he could have. You know, he just was on a team with Correa. And you just look at the other college shortstops, there's nobody who's got the combination of hit power and defense that Chalowski has, unless you go all the way back to Tulowitzki.
Right. Well, obviously, Bobby Witt signed early before college, so...
Right. Yeah, I mean, Bobby Witt's probably the best. I mean, as you mentioned, Bruce, I've been doing this for a long time, since December 88, when I started Baseball America full-time, and the two best shortstop prospects I've ever seen were both high school kids, and that was Alex Rodriguez would be one, and Bobby Witt Jr. would be number two.
Yeah, absolutely. Our guest, Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline, who does... a tremendous job, not only now, but for the last 37, going on 38 years now, and good friend of mine for a long time. When you look at the Chicago White Sox outside of the draft and the young players coming through their system now, Jim, how do you rate their system right now? Certainly they have a lot of young players that have already come through and are starting to contribute at the major league level. When you do your ratings, do you allow a qualifier for the fact that they have so many young players, rookies from last year, that should be still considered part of the developing system? How do you look at the White Sox system and where it's still at with minor leaguers that haven't made it to the rate so far?
Yeah, you don't give them credit for the guys who've gotten there and who've graduated. You know, the Colson Montgomerys and the Kyle Teals and the Edgar Caros and the Chase Maidras. It's weird. You know, we talk about the farm system rankings, and we'll have another set out probably in late February, early March. They're snapshot in time where they don't really give you like a picture of, okay, who's been promoted. It's just, okay, who's in the system right now? Now, all that said, they still have a lot of impressive young players. They've got five players on our current top 100 prospects list. You know, you've got Braden Montgomery, you know, who's another part of the Garrett Crochet trade with Kyle Teal. You have Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith, who are still two of the best lefties in the minors. You have Billy Carlson, who's last year's first-round pick, who a lot of scouts say is the best defensive shortstop they've ever seen at the high school level. And then you have Caleb Bonnemer, another shortstop, who was MVP of the Carolina League his first full pro season and was better, more consistent offensively and better defensively than scouts thought he would be. I mean, those are just the top 100 guys. And, you know, then you have younger, you know, guys like Jaden Falsky, who was a second-round pick in the draft, who's an athlete who can really hit. You know, pitchers like Cameron McDougal and Christian Lepore, who made, you know, big jumps this year. Sam Antonacci, who's maybe not the highest ceiling guy, but the high-floor guy who plays a lot of energy. Guys loved him in the fall league. And then kind of the counterbalance to him, you have George Wolkow, who, you know, reclassified in the draft early. He's still just 19, even though he's played two full years of minor league ball already. And he's kind of ceiling over floor, where it's huge power, but, you know, needs some development time. So I still think there's plenty of depth in it.
Jim, you mentioned Braden Montgomery. We actually talked to him on the show recently, and he's a guy, I think, and you tell me, this is, I guess what I'm asking you, is this a guy that you think can open the season as a starter in the outfield for the Chicago White Sox?
He could, but, and you know, you look at the White Sox outfield, and they need, I mean, that's probably the biggest glaring hole on the team right now. I mean, look, we're not trying to build a contender for the White Sox in 2026. I do think they'll be better, and they'll continue to make steps forward, but the outfield's kind of probably the weakest link on the team right now. I think he's talented enough where he could, but I don't see, when you're not trying to contend, where that makes a lot of sense. You know, he hasn't played in AAA. He's only played one season in the minors. You know, he had a bad broken leg at the end of his college career at Texas A&M, so he didn't play in 2024 before he got traded for Garrett Crochet. I'd be more comfortable giving him time in AAA to develop. And again, I mean, the reality of baseball is, you know, let's say you keep him in AAA for a couple months. Well, then you know, extend your control over him at the major league level by another year, because he won't get a full year of service time. Or, you know, perhaps if he needs more time to develop in the minors, you bring him up late, and then he qualifies for one of those extra first-round picks if he wins Rookie of the Year. He's on the roster for the full time in 2027. So I think he's talented enough, Mike, but I would give him some time in AAA and kind of see how that goes Because I just don't see the need to rush him to the big league.
Jim Callis, our guest for a few more minutes from MLB Pipeline, does a terrific job, as anyone who looks at minor league or amateur baseball knows. Let's switch over to the Cubs now. When you look at a player like Ballesteros or Casey that have been promoted in the last part of 2025 to the Cubs, are they included in your rankings as still prospects? How does that work for you, and what do you make of the Cub farm system right now? Where do you rank them?
Yeah, we use rookie standards, which are, to be rookie eligible in Major League Baseball, you can't exceed 130 at-bats, 50 innings, or 45 days of service of active service time on the active roster. And as soon as you reach those benchmarks or you exceed them, you're off the list. Casey Ballesteros still qualify. The Cubs system is interesting. I mean, you've got top 100 prospects in Casey and Ballesteros and Jackson Wiggins, who had a really nice year last year in 2025, but they're not as deep. It's kind of, it's top heavy. They've graduated guys to the big leagues too. They obviously have graduated Kay Horton the last couple of years. They graduated Shaw. They've graduated guys to the big leagues as well, but they're not as deep as they were a few years ago. And it's funny. I like both Casey and Ballesteros a lot. I probably like Casey as much as anybody in the prospect media. I focus on what he can do. He's super young. He's got big power. I think he's a little more athletic than he gets credit for. I know there's swing and miss, but I like the power. But I do think if you talk to other teams, they do worry about the swing and miss with him a little bit. And then Ballesteros is kind of a conundrum because, his bat-to-ball skills are excellent. He's grown into at least average power. But because the Cubs are playing to win now, I don't think he's ready to catch at the big league level, and he's not ready to catch on a regular basis, especially for a team that's trying to win. The pitchers are going to want a better catcher back there. So you have a guy who's, 22 years old, his bat's ready for the big leagues, no question, but you can't just say, well, we're going to give him 100 games behind the plate and let him figure it out at the big league level. It doesn't work that way with catchers. I guess the plan is what right now? That he'd get some at-bats at DH and be kind of a third catcher on the team. Even if they didn't have Michael Busch, who had a very good year last year, Ballesteros is 5'8", and the last 5'8" regular first baseman in the big leagues was in the 1930s. So it's kind of this conundrum. What do you do with him? He's ready to, there's nothing his bat needs to do in the minors. Like, he needs to be hitting in the big league, but he needs to be catching in AAA. And so he might, very promising bat, but he might get pigeonholed as a DH at a very young age.
Baseball is the one sport where you can't always look at body types like his and go, he's not going to be. He won't be. He can't be because he's heavier set, doesn't look like a baseball player, but everything that you watch on the field for Ballesteros tells you the guy is going to be a hitter, and maybe a hitter that's an all-star hitter at some point, with both power and line drive ability to both gaps, 40, 50 double guy, 20, 30 homer guy. So you have to be creative when it comes to a guy like that, don't you, Jim?
You do. I think if he can catch enough, he's a definite all-star, because he'll be one of the best hitting catchers in the majors. And then the flip side is, he might have to get more of his time at DH. You talk about body types, and, if you look at him, you want to dream of, let's say, Alejandro Kirk on the Blue Jays, who was all the way through the book series. Very good player. And, I just think Alejandro Kirk has better hands and is a better receiver. And it's one of those things, teams have metrics, but there aren't publicly available metrics that show you how good of a receiver is. You can look at pass balls, and we can look at caught stealing percentages. And last year, Ballesteros only threw out 13% of the base stealers who tested him last year. He's got a decent arm, but I just don't know if the hands are good enough to be more than a third catcher, because it's one of those things, again, you can't quantify. But if I'm a veteran pitcher, and again, I'm on a team that's trying to win, we aren't talking about, this is the Oakland A's, this is the Florida Marlins, where you'd say, we'll give him 100 games behind the plate, and we'll see how it looks. But if I'm trying to win, I'm a veteran pitcher, I want a guy who's going to hold on to the ball. I want a guy who's not going to lose me strikes because he's dropping a ball, here and there. And so it's tough because, like I said, it's I can't think of really another situation like this in the last couple of years where you've had a guy whose bat is clearly ready for the big leagues. I mean, everything you said about his bat, Bruce, 100% on. Like, this is a guy, I mean, I could see hitting 300 with 20-plus homers in the big leagues. You know, and maybe more, because he's only 22. There may be more power in there. But, you know, how do you get him in the lineup on a regular basis? I mean, maybe you put Suzuki in the outfield and Ballesteros gets the majority of that bat at DH. And that would probably be my plan going into the season. Because, like I said, I mean, this guy's hit everywhere he's been in the minors, despite being one of the youngest players in the league every year. And there's really nothing left for him to prove with the bat at the minor league level.
Yeah, Jim, and we appreciate your time. Thank you very much for joining us. It'll be interesting to see how the Cubs play this, especially with Casey and Ballesteros, and you know the positionality of Ballesteros, as you were just talking about. Certainly makes for interesting preparations for the upcoming season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a good problem to have, but it is a problem they're going to have to figure out.
Jim, thanks so much. Have a great New Year. See you soon down the line. Take care.
Yeah, Happy New Year to both you guys. Take care.
Happy New Year. That's Jim Callis, MLB Pipeline, and tied into our Kyle Tucker discussion that we were having in the last segment, Bruce, and that we can continue going forward on Inside the Clubhouse. We're going to talk about more about Tatsuya Imai signing with the Astros. We're going to mention the Alex Bregman situation in free agency. Joe Maddon will join us at the bottom of the next hour.
Full phone lines open, 312-644-6767. Cubs, Sox, everything baseball spoken here on Inside the Clubhouse.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Back with more Inside the Clubhouse. Let's see what the Cubs and Sox are doing in the offseason on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Tonight, the Bulls host the Hornets at United Center. Pregame coverage begins at 6:45. Tip-off at 7 on The Score on the Fitzgerald Equipment Bulls Radio Network, followed by Heli Forklifts. You are back on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito in for David today, and we've been talking about what's happening in the hot stove and free agency, and we talk prospects with Jim Callis just now. Joe Maddon joins us next hour. We're looking forward to talking to the former Cubs skipper on, Bruce, what is somehow the almost 10th anniversary of the World Series championship.
Well, he will be back at the Cub convention 2 weeks from today. That will be the Cub convention again. And to be his first time back in any official capacity with the Chicago Cubs since he was let go or mutually decided, whatever way you want to look at it, at the end of the 2019 season.
Yep, it'll be fun, and I'm sure Cubs fans will be very excited to see the old team together.
Yeah, so the Cub convention, the Cub convention is going to look like this. There's going to be probably 17 or 18 players and personnel from the Cubs championship team there, including Joe. But the current players that played on the 2016 team will not be a part of the opening ceremonies or the convention itself. It's now on Thursday night before the convention starts. The Cubs are hosting a special party for the Cub players and personnel from that team. In a private place, you know, that we're not going to be able to mention right now. And maybe not, some of those players from the 2016 team that are still playing. There's five of them, Mike, okay? So there's Baez, there's Bryant, there's Chapman, there's Schwarber, and there is
Wilson Contreras.
Those five will not be at the convention, and people will be saying, well, why not? first and foremost, they play for other teams, right?
Yep.
So to be a part of a winter caravan, not caravan, winter convention celebration of the Cubs going into 2026 would not be appropriate for the Cubs to have them there as a part of that opening. It's not appropriate to the other players that are part of the Cubs that welcoming in these players who are going to play against them for that year. It's not good for those players' teams either that they're at another team's convention. But on Thursday night, that celebration, there's a possibility some of those five will show up for that because it's a private function, right?
It's a dinner.
And it's a celebration of the group that the Cubs are planning. So that's Thursday night. Friday, you'll see Joe and the rest of the players there, including, obviously, Anthony Rizzo, who just retired as a Cub at the end of 2025. So lots to celebrate there, but a little bit convoluted going into it.
Makes a lot of sense. The active players not participating in Cubs convention, but the inactive and retired players will be there. And as I said, hard to believe that it's been 10 years since that World Series championship. We'll talk to Joe Maddon at the bottom of the hour.
The amazing thing, you talk about amazing players. Aroldis Chapman, 10 years later, was one of the one or two top dominant closers in baseball last year. Okay? Unbelievable that this guy at age 75. I mean, he's probably a legitimate.
He's 37.
he's probably older. And
yeah, true.
He's still throwing the ball 100 miles an hour, right?
He just had one of his best ever seasons. In fact, by WAR, last season was his best season, Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, he was arguably the best, you know, closer in the game with the guy with the Mets that just signed with Dodgers. You know, he was certainly terrific. But when you look at Chapman 10 years later, still throwing 100, blowing people away, more precision with his breaking ball. It's truly an amazing story that a power pitcher in the bullpen can last that many years and still be throwing at 100.
312-644-6767. Cubs fans, we want to pick up where we left off with your calls. Gary from Arlington Heights, please hang on. We'll get to you first up after the break. And again, we look forward to talking to Sox fans as well as to what is going on in your side.
And a little bit of chin music coming your way. If you're a Nico Horner fan, you might want to chime in.
And we'll have Joe Maddon at the bottom of the hour. What more can you ask for as we talk baseball here and inside the clubhouse on 670 The Score?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.